Good evening, Funsters, and welcome to this week's Dose of Naked Football. Tonight we welcome, of course, those with the day's Phil Ham.
Hello.
Hello. And alongside Phil, we welcome Town Fan and
ICR. An IPA drinker.
Yeah, IPA. Heavy IPA drinkers. ICR presenter Nick Cabay.
Hello.
Hello. He's a man who boasts a very eclectic collection of football shirts, so I might bring that up a bit later. And completing tonight's foursome, we welcome back the cantankerous old Git.
Hello.
Okay, we'll talk about the Portsmouth game and in particular the sending off of Liam Trotter and the subsequent appeal. And as we're now well into January, we're ever mindful of possible transfer targets. So if you wish to talk about any of this or bring up something entirely different, then email us at studio@icrfm.co.uk or text us on 07973, get my teeth in, 851968. Yes, before we broach these subjects, Nick does collect football shirts, and part of the fun of coming in is to guess which one he's got on. Even if you look at the badge, it's not easy. Today he's got one with Real Madrid plastered all over it, but he assures us it's not a Real Madrid t-shirt. So what is it, Nick?
It confused me when I got it off eBay. It's actually the Brazilian club, Cruzeiro. They've had a special relationship with Real Madrid over the decades. They've had a Cruzeiro manager's gone on to manage Real Madrid, and Cruzeiro players have gone on to play for Real Madrid. So, sort of in tribute to the club that they're a farm club for, if you get my meaning, they produced this navy blue shirt with Real Madrid emblazoned all over it.
And why has it got an Italian flag on the arm? This is great radio, by the way.
Who knows? Goodness, is it an Italian flag or is it a Mexican flag?
Oh, you could be right.
No, that's an Italian flag, actually, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah, definitely. I don't know.
If someone knows, then they can email us in. But we've already had an email, apparently, Graham.
We have. I'll get to that in a minute when I open it, because we've got a few others as well.
Oh. So masterful, Graham.
Yeah. Do you want to quickly talk about the Portsmouth game before you get to the sending off part?
How quickly?
Well, the first 24 minutes of the game.
Well, I mean, the game as a whole, leaving out the sending off part, which we'll come to.
I think entirely heartening performance, really, that we can threaten to beat a Premiership side with only 10 men. I mean, it was one of those games where you did think that if we scored a goal, that Portsmouth would probably step up a gear and could probably play with far more energy and endeavour than they had up to that point. But you know, we did seriously threaten them, and it took three very, very good saves from David James to stop us getting a draw. I don't know what you
thought.
That
was the best goalkeeping performance, I thought, since West Ham came down about 5 years ago, when in goal was David James.
Oh, yes, that's...
Yeah, he didn't seem to appreciate our chance of England's number four.
Oh, he did.
Rather spurred him on, I thought.
But he did take it quite well, because he did turn around and count out number five with his hand, didn't he, at one stage, which was quite amusing.
I must admit, for me, one difference maker, David James. I know I'm neglecting David Nugent there, because he always scores against Town.
Yeah.
But, David James, three fantastic saves. You get to realise just how good they were when you actually see them on TV.
Yeah.
And what he had to do to get to those three shots. It could have been a very, very different game, considering the fact Town had 10 players at the time.
He helps himself by being so fit, doesn't he? There are so many fat goalkeepers about, like that big-eared one that sits on the bench at West Ham. If you keep yourself as fit as David James, then added to your height and some skill, you do give yourself every chance, don't you? Well, I thought his performance was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great goalkeeper. I mean,
it reminds us what we've been missing for quite some time, doesn't it? That was a real...
I know. It's when you've got England manager, I think...
Now do we talk about Trotter?
Well, we could come on to that. I mean...
Right, I've got three... Well,
75 emails.
Yeah, that's right. They're all coming in at once, right? I've got... Right, this one's just come in. Pabs and Lee from Witham. What are your thoughts on the disgraceful decision not to overrule Trotter's red card? Well, if you want to do that quickly, Phil, I'll just get to the next two, which are on a similar subject.
I mean, I was absolutely astounded. I don't know what everyone else was feeling when he was red carded. It was the referee calls him over, and you think that he's probably going to book him, but it's fairly early in the game still, so he might let him go. Young lad, you know, you've seen it before, but the referee just said, just be careful next time, you know. And Mendes really, when you see the replay, was hardly touched, if touched at all.
He was jumping when Liam Trotter made contact with
him. But that's fair enough, though, in actually fact to do some jumping, to jump out,
to
of,
get
the
out of the way
of a two-footed tackle.
But it wasn't a two-footed tackle.
Well, that's arguable, isn't it? As to what you don't actually strap your so many different issues. Actually, the one issue that I'd like to identify is it's you would think that there's three decisions. He does nothing, he gives a yellow card, or he gives a red card.
Mm.
And you think that the compromise choice was the yellow card. 90% of yellow cards are not followed by any further punishment.
Sure.
There's no implications.
Yeah.
Whereas a red card, particularly early in the game,
changes,
you get suspended for three matches. The actual match in hand is completely distorted by the sending off. I think that the real problem is not that the referee perhaps made the wrong decision there, but that the implications of a red card are so completely out of proportion to everything else. Well, for example, if you get two yellows in the course of a match, then you get sent off in about the 70th or 80th minute.
Mm.
And your suspension then is just for 90 minutes, isn't it? So 100 minutes in total, despite the fact that you've committed two offences, so 50 minutes per offence. You commit one offence for a red card, and Trotter will be suspended in total from the moment of coming off for 335 minutes, which is about seven times the punishment
for
one. Well, that's my case.
What I would say about the decision itself, the challenge was, I mean, the red card was for serious foul play. Now, if you look in the FA handbook, which is and the laws, there's a guide in there of what constitutes serious foul play. It doesn't say that. It's page 97, if anyone wants to have a look, because I looked at it yesterday. And it's available via the FA's website. If you go to the FA section, and there's FA rules and laws of football. But there are two photographic guides of what constitutes a serious foul play. And both of them are with the foot raised, sort of, so they were catching the player on the shin rather than sort of lightly scuffing the player's toe as the challenge on Saturday did. I mean, I think if you were to compare Trotter's challenge with the challenges illustrated in the FA's own guidelines, then I think he was treated very, very harshly indeed. And for the appeals panel to uphold the decision, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, it just shows the kind of... what's the word? The appeals panel can surely not be as independent as they're sort of claimed to be.
Can I bring you on to that then, Phil?
Yeah.
We've got three emails now. This one's from Simon Allardyce in sunny Bristol. He's lucky, isn't he?
Yeah,
why are people surprised that the red card appeal was refused, just in keeping with FA and FIFA to back the refs? I had one earlier from Adrian of Ipswich. Read the sending off. How does the appeal system work? Is it only the referee who looks at the incident again, or is there a panel of people? And one which, this one from the Vulture, read the unsuccessful Trotter appeal. Does the panel think that this kind of decision should be looked at by people who have actually played the game of football rather than the ragtag bunch of accountants, administrators and associated old farts in suits with an average age of around 170? I put the 100 in just for effect. Which seems to be the key demographic of the gentlemen who run our national game. So, Phil, you must have some info on who runs this thing.
Well, the decision was made, the appeal was heard by the FA's regulatory committee, it says on their website, which their website doesn't seem to have a lot of information on their regulatory committee, but it does refer to their FA disciplinary processes for season 2006-2007. It refers to a disciplinary commission, and it says that it is made up thus. They act as independent tribunals and are convened to hear both claims for wrongful dismissal and disciplinary charges. Disciplinary commissions are comprised of three disciplinary committee members, I think that's your 170-year-old ex-public schoolboys, plus a member of the specialist panel comprised of former players, managers, referees and administrators. The composition of each disciplinary commission is decided by the chairman of the disciplinary committee. Commissions effectively act as independent tribunals, considering cases, deciding on guilt or otherwise, and determining penalties. Compliance presents the case on behalf of the...
Is this a shock, though? Was someone out there wanting instead to have sort of three North Standers and a nude young woman? It's hardly surprising that on the regulatory or disciplinary...
No, but I think that's the
a
point.
A bunch of old farts. That's what you would expect to be...
There's no reason not to criticise it for that.
I mean, is this...
There's nothing to criticise.
Yeah, is this not just a simple example of paranoia regarding tackles in the game? And as someone pointed out, look, you take tackles like that out of the sport, it becomes a non-contact sport. Do we feel that FIFA and the FA are going too far back in the refs and it's making the game into a laughingstock?
Nasty two-footed tackles should be removed.
Yeah,
of course,
And have been removed from the game, and that is how we would wish it to be. No one wants to go and see fouls. No. We want to see skillful players protected from nasty two-footed tackles. And did you see the irony that the assessor for last Saturday's match was Kelvin Morton, and in his column on Sunday in the Greenan, which obviously was written before the match, he said, the real thing that we'd like to eliminate is this spate recently of two-footed nasty tackles.
Yeah, it's just it's a moral panic, isn't it, really, in terms of there's probably as many two-footed tackles going in recently as there have been, but referees have just chosen to kind of clamp down on them.
Well, it's a good thing to clamp down on.
Something that the media have gone a bit sort of...
Well, I think we've exaggerated. Look, that's what I really think. I think we're exaggerating the thing about Trotter. I know it was extraordinary how he waited and waited and waited. And here's another issue.
Well, and yes, exactly.
Well, doesn't it make sense to consult? We want...
Well, it makes sense to consult, but it's against the rules to consult.
It's like he made his mind up one way.
If it was against the rules to consult, then that's a stupid rule. Consulting makes sense.
All right, in terms of if he'd had video evidence, which I think was the suggestion at the weekend, wasn't it?
Well, presumably he was hearing through his piece from the linesman and from the fourth official and perhaps from Joe Jordan as well. It makes sense to consult. However, if what Trotter was quoted as saying was true in the Italian, that Trotter said that the referee had said, let me reassure you immediately, you're going to get a yellow card.
Yeah. And then he changes his mind.
So he made the right decision, and it was then still the right decision to consult. But I wonder what actually then changed his mind in the consultation.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you know, the serious foul play, the whole point of that area of the laws is to avoid players getting seriously injured. Well, you know, no one was going to get seriously injured by that challenge.
What about Sito's earlier two-footed challenge?
See, I've missed this completely. I mean, people have mentioned it on the message board. I didn't even see it.
He went in for a two-footed challenge, and then about 5 minutes later, he banged into Crankyar pretty hard as well.
Mm. I mean, there was one in a Portsmouth player flew in at, and I can't think which Ipswich player it was. It might have been Sito, funnily enough, but Sito stepped away, and if he'd have caught him, that was a far worse challenge, far more dangerous challenge than Trotter. Someone might remember it was right in the corner of the right by the corner in the first half, I think it was. But you know, you looked at it and thought, well, Trotter's been sent off for that. There are so many other tackles that are far, far more dangerous.
Yeah.
And the whole point is that it was supposedly a dangerous.
What about the sin bin then? Because our real agony was that the boy is off and he's not just going to be... Do you remember the Marcus Stewart one? That was the really tragic one, wasn't it? That he was the leading goal scorer in the Premiership. And tragically...
And Ian Hart.
Ian Hart,
throws himself into the air.
Probably clutching the wrong leg as well. That was a tragic incident.
Well, and apparently winking at the crowd in the...
Well, as long as he was just winking, that then kept it within our guidelines.
Yes. The penalty box, as they term it in ice hockey, the sin bin. I mean, that's an idea that a lot of people have talked about. I think someone wrote
it. It brings on the power play situation like you have in rugby league and like ice hockey, where it's 10 minutes, isn't it? And that's all length of time.
I see what you mean. So whilst the team is down to 10 men, you kind of throw things forward, throw extra men forward in order to make the most of that spell of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose it could present another aspect of tactics, but I certainly think in circumstances where, as you say, that you've got a player, the punishment very, very much outweighs the crime. And I would say the same thing is the case when a player trips someone in the penalty area and gives away a penalty in the third minute or something like that. The game is so massively distorted by that decision that...
doubly distorted, because A, a penalty has been created, no doubt a goal, and secondly, the defending player is off for the rest of the game.
Yeah,
but all this begs the question, would Town have played the way they did had they stayed on?
I think that recently the crowd's hatred of the referee has actually helped the players to play better.
Yeah.
In the absence of our sort of positive crowd contribution of singing happily... our negative hatred singing has helped the players, because we're certainly not singing positively other than...
So do you think there's a case for handing out leaflets with a list of the referee's previous crimes against Town in previous matches before games?
Well, Town fans remember quite well.
Yeah, well, I do. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I mean, Mark Housie, I mean, the classic thing about Mark Housie, the previous problem that we've had with him was the 1998 playoff semi-final at Bolton Wanderers when... David Johnson was quite blatantly fouled in the penalty area, and he didn't give a penalty. And of course, at the time, Mark Housie was a resident of Welwyn Garden City, as we all know. Since then, Mark Housie has moved to Bolton. I don't want to suggest that there's anything dodgy in this, but you know that.
Isn't it lovely, referee hatred, particularly in old men? Years ago, it was only North Stand people that hated referees, and it is fair to say that 7,500 referees a year, according to the FA, do stop refereeing because of the fact that we hate them. In the country's biggest football association area, Birmingham, 20% of matches last year took place without a referee because it's such a thankless task. Yeah. And people, of course, are actually assaulting. The FA say that nearly 10 people a week assault referees, as in actually hit referees.
Well, obviously, you know... You
And years ago, it was just youngsters like Phil who hated referees. Whereas now, you can get the whole crowd singing.
Yeah.
There's no perfect answer. Referees do a thankless task.
Yeah.
You know, without them, there's nothing. You know, nothing worse than a bad referee, other than no referee at all, isn't there?
Well,
who would you prefer? Look, I've written down names: Rob Stiles, Mike Riley, Uriah Rennie, Rob Lewis, Barry Knight, Kevin Friend, Andy Durso, Mark Clattenburg. There's no one perfect there.
Well, Kevin Friend obviously depends whether you're home or away. Uriah Rennie's always been a good referee by us, hasn't he? I think that's I remember he refereed a derby against Norwich some years ago.
And Fleck. Do you remember? There was a fabulous photograph in the newspaper of tiny little Fleck angrily pointing his finger up at Uriah Rennie, who was over him like a great big cloud, completely impassive, looking down at little tiny Fleck, and then he sent him off.
He's a national level kickboxer as well, Uriah Rennie.
He's after himself.
Yeah. So. Well, that wouldn't stop Fleck, though, would it?
No.
Actually, talking of tiny little people, at the reserves match this week, those enormous Wellington boots that we saw across the pitch, and then it turned out to be that the Wellingtons weren't of enormous size, they were of normal size, but it turned out that Peter Taylor is a tiny, tiny...
I was surprised quite how diminutive Peter Taylor was, I have to say. Yes,
the Wellingtons were normal size.
There to watch Tommy Smith, apparently, so I've been told, with a view to taking him on loan at Stevenage Borough.
Nice to have a rumour about one of our players, because we are the most unrumoured club in the whole country on all these footballrumour.com. There's no men you put in.
Well, I think actually,
nothing,
if you go,
search as match.
I think footballrumours.com, I don't think you see much about Ipswich, because over the summer there was a kind of a fashion on the message board for sending them the most outlandish rumours. And I think they just got fed up with them. Have we had anything on the email?
We have, but you've been going on so much, you lot. So,
right,
this is back to the sending off. A straight red for any two-footed challenge is excessive. I think there's a case for a low two-footed challenge that clearly wins the ball.
Yeah, but it
only
wasn't
being
two-footed.
Yellow.
I would argue that it was not two-footed.
I know. I think that's because we were talking about two-footed challenge. That's from Brendan in London.
I don't think it started two-footed.
I don't think it did.
What about Queen's Park Rangers? Are they going to get promotion now?
Can we keep on the subject?
They buy every single player in the championship.
I think they're buying relegation because they're buying all these crap players.
Well, this is all I heard about Sky Sports News the other afternoon. QPR and a spending spree. They spent 1.5 million.
Really?
And the team have bought back six players for
they
that.
They have bought six players.
Well, someone posted on the message board this afternoon that there's only been 13 transfers in the championship since the window opened, and about seven of them have been QPR, which is extraordinary, really. But anyway, Karen, sorry.
Sorry that people are still on, because they're still 10 minutes behind, obviously. They're still talking about the sending off. You may also... wish to point out that that FIFA have previously threatened sanctions against the English FA for overturning red cards.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was...
That's Simon Allardyce again from
Bristol.
That
is something that seems... I mean, it's ludicrous to have different policies in different countries, really, isn't it? I mean, but it's ludicrous that we all know that referees make mistakes. Even referees, with perhaps the exception of Mark Housie, know that they make mistakes. And something has to be done to correct them at the later date, I think, because you get these situations where Liam Trotter, or all right, in the case actually of a decision that was overturned, George O'Callaghan last year, he was sent off for violent conduct, which is another three-match ban. there was clearly nothing at all there, and the video panel or whatever they are looked at it and decided, no, I think, you know, that's perfectly reasonable. I think it's ridiculous that FIFA take that stance.
Okay, football rumours. What did the panel think of Big Sam getting the sack tonight?
Yeah, I just heard it as I got out of the car. So
that's from Seato in Essex.
Yeah, it's well,
I didn't know it happened.
Newcastle, well, literally about just as we went on the air. Right. Newcastle have a history of sacking managers very quickly, and doesn't seem to have changed very much with their new.
Well, look at Ruud Gullit. He lasted a year.
Yeah,
look where he took him. Sam Allardyce, for my money, is a good manager. I think Newcastle fans expect too much sometimes. I think they're a club that they're way bigger in their own estimations than they really are.
Well, what have they won? They've not won anything in my lifetime.
18 years. They haven't won anything for 18 years.
Well, it was the Fairs Cup, wasn't it?
That was the second division championship that they won last, wasn't it? The last thing that they actually won.
I just recall reading that they haven't won anything for 18 years. They won the UEFA Cup in 1969.
When it was called the Fairs Cup.
It was
the
Fairs Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, when Ipswich played Newcastle in 91-92, the season that we went up, I think they went up the year after, didn't they? The crowd at St James's Park was something like 10,000.
There we go, yeah.
They are a much smaller club than they think they are. And as someone pointed out the other day, they seem to think they've got this God-given right that they should be competing with the likes of, I don't know, Manchester United, etc. And they haven't done for 50 years.
More relevantly, what I wanted to mention with Newcastle was, how come Joey Barton lives in Widnes and plays for Newcastle? According to the AA, that's over a three-hour drive from Widnes to Newcastle.
Oh, I'm sure.
Is there a Premiership tunnel? Is there a tunnel underneath the country? Because there's all sorts of people. Look at Marcus Bent. Marcus Bent, the Wigan player, is enjoying all these glamour ladies. Well, from White's, was it China White's club to Wigan?
Yeah.
The AA estimate will take you over 4 hours. And presumably, Marcus Bent has to drive straight from White's club to training at Wigan. And that's a distance of over 4 hours. I don't think that they could do that. I think there's a Premiership tunnel. There's a lot of money in the Premiership. And they're all underneath there, whizzing about with sort of spit-roasting Totty as hostess on these little...
No, I think... Yeah,
well, Sam Allardyce lives in Woking or somewhere, doesn't he?
I imagine that footballers can probably afford more than one house. I imagine that's what your solution to your problem is. I don't know.
Well, but lots of them... But we'll say anyway, Matt Holland lives Colchester. We'll get the man from Colchester to West Ham. It's not that easy, is it?
Charlton, I think Herman was living in Ipswich for quite a long time.
You say one house... Mr. Barton, when he was with us in the community,
which I believe he is again.
Well, which I agreed with the judge that I want to be protected from him. he's giving his address as witness, and he's out in Liverpool entertaining everyone. So he really is actually in Liverpool. So they really are travelling these enormous distances, aren't they?
And your point regarding this is,
I have no idea.
Well, maybe if we move on to who we think will actually become the new Newcastle boss. I mean, who would you say, Phil, would be?
I've no idea. Apparently, isn't it going to be? I know it's Klinsmann is supposed to be the new Liverpool boss when they sack their manager, isn't it? That was yesterday's story, wasn't it? I don't know.
Be Tony Pulis.
I imagine it will probably be somebody foreign, won't it? I mean, it almost always is with a big club these days.
Scottish, do you think?
Or Steve McLaren.
Yeah, that would be my other point. Do you think they would take the risk him being an ex-Middlesbrough man, or does that not matter these days?
No, I think the bigger risk is the fact that he hasn't got a clue what he's doing.
Well, it worked at Middlesbrough, and to be fair, they're a similar...
He didn't. He took Middlesbrough to seventh.
Well, for Middlesbrough, Newcastle, that would be ambitious, wouldn't
these
it?
These days, So what do we think about Town? I mean, that's more important,
isn't it? Right, of course,
Who are we actually going to sign during January? And are you concerned...
The third man, Harry Lyme.
Yeah, I was tempted to make a lot of
is
that
it a clue?
Morning.
Is it a clue? Do you think citrus, orange, Victoria Beckham, David Beckham? Could you make that link?
Bobby Lemon from Lake Norrient. Who do you think we'll actually? Are you concerned that we're at what are we? The,
very concerned.
The 9th of January, and we've not signed anyone. Does it?
Well, I think clearly Mr. Evans has summoned Sheepy and Jim down to Connaught Place to say, "Come on, spend my money, please." Or to give his view. Perhaps he's got someone up his sleeve. Perhaps he Billy Bremner or someone he thinks should join us, or perhaps he's got queries about Norris. He doesn't think that Norris is tall enough. Because clearly we're not getting on with it. Are we?
What came of
this? I think it's time for panic.
Well, what came of the scouting missions in Central and Eastern Europe? We looked at some Polish players.
Well, they went to Poland, didn't they? They looked at game after. Well, I think they looked at game a day, but I don't think there was anybody that really stood out.
3 days, so that was three games.
And it was part of the thing, I think, was to sort of meet people as well in the. You know, at various clubs and various agencies.
So it's the setting up of a network.
Because really,
we're 12 million.
But we're behind. We're really behind on everybody else, I think, in terms of Central Europe, because you've got sides that have been signing Hungarian, Polish, and Slovak and Czech players for the last 3 or 4 years, and we've not.
We're not used to signing players. In fairness, we haven't been sort of looking for to sign players at all. We've been looking to sell the players. Indeed, we've never really signed any big names, have we? Sort of Muren and Tyson and
Bobby Robson was 14 players. Bobby Robson signed his entire management, something like that, wasn't it?
Tiny number. We've never signed big name players with no tradition or. And Jim is certainly not in the. Perhaps Jim is totally inexperienced at these things. I do sort of fear that we're not actually in the ball game.
Well, we've got three bids in. Norris is obviously one, and Norris is a complicated transfer because of this element of Bolton having 50% and all that kind of stuff, and whether Plymouth can
Bolton
try and
don't need it. They've probably forgotten about it.
Well, they may have done until Plymouth gave them a shout. But you wonder whether Plymouth are saying to Bolton, "Well, look, we're going to demand $3 million, and no one's going to pay $3 million." So. Reduce the percentage that you want, but then you don't know whether Bolton will just say, "Well, we're not going to negotiate." But clearly, that's causing some form of problem with the deal, with that going through.
Stoke come up and Nigel Kwasi and. Who else are they doing?
Andy Griffin. Shawcross on loan from Manchester United.
But they're actually going to sign him.
Oh, are they?
I think so. He's got £1 million.
He's not a bad. I thought he did really well at the weekend.
Andy
Griffin, supposedly a target of ours, although I don't know whether he really fits into the sort of Jim mould of a player, but Jim tends to go for the younger player, doesn't he?
Do you feel completely confident that Jim has sort of looked at sort of 1,000 names and he's got a whole office devoted to this and people are sort of winnowing it down and looking at tapes and they've got big charts up on the wall and young women and everything?
No, I don't think they'll spend much of the money either. I think they'll play at cage.
Well, £1 million is a lot of money. And you could.
It is a championship level, certainly, yeah.
I don't think it's that huge. I mean, how many players would you say that 12 million is?
Well, the Queen's Park is over 40.
Well, all right. at the level that we're at, obviously it's what? It's
pounds.
An eighth of a Ronaldinho.
It's five John Walters.
Yeah, you could probably get four or five.
Five John Walters, would it be? I don't know. What would his wages be?
Oh, well, the wages thing is a blurring. I thought all this was just muddying the water.
If you're just talking about spending the 12 mil, you could probably buy three or four decent, promising players for that.
Well, if you put the £12 million down as a first payment, don't forget that everyone pays them in stages, don't they? You could get £36 million worth of... We could buy Verbatov.
Yeah, I don't think that's...
But he doesn't want to leave Spurs, apparently.
No, but I think that what we'll try and do is buy 3-4 players now and then 3 or 4 players in the summer.
Why are we waiting for the summer?
It's about building a squad rather than just
build it by spending £12 million on...
Yeah, but you just said that QPR are doing that. They'll buy themselves relegation.
They're buying all...
That sort of talk would be fine if we were mid-table, we're sixth, and if we can get the away form up and running, then we're in with a really decent shout. So
I can't
sure
believe
we've
got to the 29th
now.
Minute and we've only mentioned away form.
That
now.
Is it.
That's the first time we have
actually run out. So as Jeremy Clarkson would say on that bombshell, it's time to go. Before we go, a quick apologies to Mariner, Dean Mitchell, Factual Blue, Paul Atkins and Dan, who all sent in emails but didn't get them read out. I will keep a couple of them till next time because they're quite pertinent. So thanks to all you guys who emailed. Thanks to Nick. Thanks to Mr. Gitt. Thanks, as usual, to Phil up in Grand Blackburn Rovers. Have a good week. Till next time. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.